skin so gorgeous. We thank the life gorgeous.
Thank the life gorgeous. I love the life gorgeous. It's also so tight.
Well, well, well. From my mahogany panel den, this is The Life Gorgeous, where I share my magical life in hopes of improving your life. My name is Mr. Kilbourne, and oh, what a show we have for you today. The fan questions are coming up. Make sure you go to YouTube, ask a question, and subscribe. You guys are doing a hell of a job. Today's guest is Chris Finch of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and it's a very special guest for me. You know, The Life Gorgeous includes a lot of things: fine dining, drinking in moderation, exercising, old movies, and hobbies and interests. When I was a kid, my whole childhood was comedy and basketball. And my favorite team as an adult are the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they hired this guy named Chris Finch, who paid his dues. He coached in Europe. He was an assistant. He bounced around. He was always good. And now he's great with the Timberwolves. Everyone loves him there. They gave him a contract extension, well-deserved. We made the playoffs. We've got something special going on. I enjoyed talking to Coach. I never met him before. He was a hell of a player in college. He was Division III. Of course, I was Division I, but we don't bring that up in the interview. There's no reason for me to do that. I take the high road. I want to keep his confidence level up. See what I did there? Wolves. Wolves pride. America and the world, because we're big in London and Paris. Say hello to Chris Finch. Oh, America, this is what you wanted. The head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, Chris Finch. Thank you, sir. I know you're busy.
No. Always make time for a great fan.
Thank you. This is kind of like the natural host meets the natural coach. It's similar to two great basketball minds meeting, and it would be almost if Dr. James Naismith somehow chatted with Michael Jordan. I mean, are you excited to talk basketball with Kreggers?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I assume that you're the Naismith and I'm the Jordan, right?
Exactly. Very good. Because I'm slow, man. No, I'm actually cat quick. I just didn't have a lot of endurance. I had a bad lower back. The defensive stance hurt my lower back. I was like a Pistol Pete, but I am going to ask you later what kind of player you were. Before we get to that, let me just do a little house setting here. My perspective, my worldview is, and I don't want to put any pressure on you, the two most important jobs in America, number one, president of the United States, number two, head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Well, we earn more money than the president, so we might actually have more importance around here anyway. So,
congrats on that extension, by the way. You deserve it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yeah.
And I also seriously want to say, I love it when a talented guy gets a head coaching opportunity. I know how you've been an assistant, you've paid your dues, and congratulations getting a head coach, and you're taking full advantage of it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's, you know, when you start down these paths in life, you know, as I'm sure with your career, like you knew kind of where you wanted to end up. You just didn't know how you were going to get there. And I've often said, like, looking back, you know, sometimes, well, all the experiences and sometimes the frustrations or the, you know, the dead ends that you seemingly find yourself in, what you don't realize is that they're all learning moments and they all stack up on top of each other. And they're all things that I can draw from now, whether it be things that I, you know, need to do or react to in my day-to-day job, or just how I might help mentor other staff, you know, particularly younger staff, and just, you know, help them along in their careers.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people in the organization and in town, and they rave about you. We have a lot in common. We're both egoless. Kidding. But no, they say you don't have an ego. But here's the thing. The other thing they say about you, and this is what, you know, Kat calls you a genius. But all the guys, I mean, Tim Connolly, Jim Peterson, I've heard D'Lo say it, Finchy will figure it out. Like, you're some miracle worker. I mean, how do you handle that? And do you rely on your assistants to figure out this cohesion with the team?
Yeah. Well, I think the what's most meaningful to me in all that is not necessarily the high praise, although that's nice. It's really more the confidence that people have that we're going to be able to do things the way we need to do them and get to the answer we need to. We have a great staff. I think these jobs are just way too big as a head coach, just way too big to be able to have all the answers yourself, and particularly with everything that we need to do on the people side of things. Like, you know, head coach in the NBA is far more about leadership at this point than it is about X's and O's. I think that you have to have some governance over that, but that's why you'll have a great staff to help you in those areas. So you can dedicate my time to where it's needed most. And that's with players and the relationship between the staff and the players and myself and the players to each other as well. So the basketball piece, you know, I don't think any team is out there doing anything that's super, revolutionary or new at this point. It's kind of just a mix and a match of old concepts that you just kind of sort through and figure out if they work well enough for you.
Speaking of revolutionary, I'm going to open up and be vulnerable. Coach, I sometimes will go to the Polo Lounge in Beverly Hills. It's the beautiful Beverly Hills Hotel, the pink one on Sunset. And I go there and I have a martini and I start dreaming. And Pepe, who runs the place, will bring me a cocktail napkin from the Polo Lounge. And I will write down offensive plays for the Timberwolves and for you. And I've sent three of them, two to Ethan Cass and one to Ryan Tankey. Have you received any of these offensive plays?
I have not. And well, going forward, just send them right to me. Like, you know, we don't need quality control.
So. Well, I will tell you, I know that when you came to the Wolves, they said you're an offensive savant. And of course, you guys also played great defense. I say you guys, I usually say we. But my influence on the offensive plays, I loved Rick Adelman and Pete Carell, the Sacramento Kings, and they would do things in the half-court offense, which is demoralizing to the defense, these backdoor cuts where guards get a layup. Did you like that Sacramento Kings offense?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of our principles, we're kind of a movement-based team. A lot of our principles kind of come from my history. Growing up, I went to all Pete Carril's camps.
Oh, really? At Princeton, yeah.
He coached at Reading High School in Pennsylvania. He was gone before I had come through, but there's a legacy of him in the area. He recruited me at Princeton. Wasn't wow. quite good enough to make the grade. Actually, my first coach was a guy who played for him, so there was kind of a disciple pipeline there. And then when I first came to the league, I was the G League coach with the Houston Rockets, and who was coaching the Rockets at the time, but Rick Adelman running his offense. So, like, these touch points are, you know, I'm not necessarily in their stables of coaches, but I've got to see all these different fluid motion offenses.
Yeah.
At work and picked up things here and there from everybody.
I wanted to ask you what kind of player you were. Now, do you remember a guy from Mississippi, Ole Miss, named Johnny Newman, or is that before your time? Do you remember that guy, white guy? No?
Yeah, I don't remember.
He had a full head of hair. He was a scorer. He was like a pistol, but 6'6", a little like Pistol Pete. But then I read that you played defense, more of a defensive specialist. So then I'm thinking Bobby Hansen. Remember him from Iowa? Played for the Jazz. Yeah. So what kind of ball player were you?
I was more of a pass first, like kind of a playmaking wing. Andre Iguodala type, actually.
Oh.
You know, I was a defender, but an off-the-ball playmaker. I always played with like scoring point guards. So that kind of, you know, I could shoot it a little bit. I could score it a little bit, but I was really good reading the floor, making plays out of the secondary actions, oftentimes defending the best player on the other team. Just kind of like Andre Iguodala would be probably a better jump shot than Andre.
Okay. Well, I was saying he's probably a better athlete, but Pat Riley was a very,
definitely.
Pat Riley was a very good athlete. And he wasn't, I thought he was a defender. I think he actually jumped center at Kentucky. But you were a pretty good player. You played Division II or Division III or what was it?
Division III, yeah.
Yeah.
So, played Division III. I was a two-time All-American there. We lost in the national championship game my junior year to Bo Ryan's Wisconsin Platteville back when he was coming up the ranks.
I did hear that I think you did an interview and you said, I hope you're enjoying your position because this is a really nice spot you're in and you're doing a hell of a job. But I think you said when you become a head coach after assistant, you can't really enjoy like dinner with your family because you're always thinking. Is that true?
Yeah. It's true. You know, so I never was an assistant coach until I got to the league. I was really lucky. I had an opportunity to be a head coach overseas in Europe at the age of 27. And pretty much my first 13 years of coaching were as a head coach overseas or in the G League. And then when I became an assistant, I had to learn like the rhythm of what an assistant coach does and just the slight differences and stuff. But yeah, you always have that appreciation for what the head coach is going through. So people would ask me all the time, like, what's the difference between being a head coach and being an assistant coach? And I would say, I'll boil it down to this. It really comes down to the decision-making rights and the pressure that that brings. And, you know, and I always used an example, like I could go out to dinner with my wife or girlfriend or whatever and enjoy being in the moment as an assistant coach. But as a head coach, you're just far too distracted to be really in the moment with anything.
Right. I wanted to ask you about if you're enjoying the Twin Cities. I know last year you went to the state fair and I think you fell in love with the pork chop on a stick, which is tremendous. I wanted to know if you went back this year and if you were mobbed the second time you went. Did you go back this year?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go back this year because I was overseas with Basketball Down Borders and then went to Eurobasket to watch Rudy Gobert play for, with his French team. So I missed that entire window. It was bad planning by me. But I love my experience at the state fair, the pork chop at 9:30 in the morning. I mean, who, you know, what else do you want at 9:30 in the morning? Followed up by a deep fried Oreo. To answer the second part, I mean, what's been fun is, as you know, this is a great sports town. It really is a great sports town. Like one of the best I've ever worked in or been around. And, you know, walking around, of course, there's a lot of excitement about our team. So everything that we, you know, are experiencing is mostly positive, you know, interaction and feedback. But the people are excited and they've been nothing but nice and welcoming and just come right up and talk to you. And I like that. You know, it's just it just normalizes it. Everything feels like makes you even feel more of a part of a community.
Yeah. Everyone's nice and they're down to earth and it's a special place. And I've been following the Wolves obviously since 89 when they came into the league, but I was for 20 years before that, I was a Knicks fan. My dad was from New York and I was addicted to the NBA. And I also, since 1970, have followed our Minnesota Vikings. Have you gone to a Vikings game? Were you at the Packers game or not?
I wasn't there the other day. I went to two last year. I saw them play the Cowboys and play the Steelers. So, I always root hard for the local teams. You know, it's always try to, you know, back them. And if, you know, I like to meet the coaches and just when possible, just kind of exchange some ideas. And haven't met Kevin O'Connell yet, but looking forward to the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, he played hoops. He played hoops in addition to football. We got to clear something up. This is the kind of how you measure a man. I get these reports you like gin and tonic, and then I hear margaritas. I'm just confused. Clear it up, man.
I mean, I'm vodka soda guy. I'll tell you, since being in Minnesota, my beer intake has gone through the roof. It's just, you know, the weather here in the summer is so nice. Just a beer to sit outside or out on the boat at Lake Minnetonka. I don't think the boat runs without beer. You
know? You know, I got to tell you, I've said, and I do talk alcohol a little bit. I also tell the young people to drink in moderation. Don't chase the night, get to bed, all this kind of stuff. You got to be careful. But beer, I've said in the past, is easily the most refreshing, especially in a hot summer day. But I don't drink it anymore because I get fleshy. So I'm limited to red wine and vodka martinis. And I would tell you, don't do the margaritas. Don't do all that sugar. You don't need that. That's be disciplined. Have a martini. I love the shape of the martini glasses. Go over to Manny's. Mention my name. Well, you don't have to. You're Chris Finch. Mention your name. Where did you go after the greatest game in Timberwolves history? Tell me where you went after the Clipper play-in game. which I just was so ecstatic. I was so happy. D'Lo scored 29. Cat was taken out of the game. Thank you for that victory, sir.
No. Well, I'm just trying to think. I don't think we went anywhere. I literally had a bunch of people in town, family and whatnot. I think we just went back home.
Okay.
That was a magical night. You know, we got criticized a lot, the media, for over celebrating. There's no such thing, man. When you reach a goal like that, particularly for a franchise who's been, you know, figuring out how to get back to where they were, you know, and it's just in the fans and the COVID, and people want to come back and watch teams and be a part of something. And the emotional connection between the fans and this team built fast in the second half of the season. And I think that's one of the things that makes this a really fun and unique sports town is that connection. And so listen, I mean, I told our guys, like, the next day, you deserved every piece of joy that you guys celebrated with because you earned it.
Yeah, I thought it was silly. And I know some of these people at Turner Sports. And I said, first of all, most of it was Patrick Beverley, and it was personal for him because it was the Clippers that got rid of him. And then Ant follows suit and jumps up there on the scorer's table. I could care less. I mean, do whatever the hell you want, man. It was a huge deal. And the other thing, I'm going to start getting a little hoops, and this is a treat for me to ask you some of these hoop questions. So the Rudy trade happens, and the national media, and I know these guys, Ryan Russillo and Simmons, and they're bent out of shape. And I had Ryan on, and I ripped him, and I said, just chill out. I mean, you know, I don't know if they know that we were trying to get someone like Miles Turner or Clint Capella to play with Cat, and then all of a sudden, somehow, some way, Rudy Gobert becomes available. And this is amazing. And as we all said, Finchie will figure out the offense in the playoffs, as it's like a given we're going to be in the playoffs. But do you ignore the national stuff after the Gobert trade? I mean, you got to be ecstatic that you have Rudy.
Yeah, I think we certainly ignore the national stuff. That's not discounting anyone's opinion. It's just that we were all in alignment when we made the trade. We were super excited to be able to do so. You know, we clawed back as much value as we possibly can, i.e. Jaden McDaniels and just some other protections on the picks, and got to a place where we were comfortable. Reality is, like, if you put up on the board the top 30 players in the league, whoever they are in your mind, you know, there's going to be a ton of, like, crossover between you and everybody else. On any given day in the summertime, I bet you only maybe 2 to 3, if you're lucky, 4 are even available for 10 first round picks. Like, no one's trading some of these guys, no matter how much you give up.
Right.
So when they become available, if you're in a position to be aggressive, go be aggressive. I think we've put so much stock in what is value, assets, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of really great and smart people that have, you know, developed this kind of philosophy of roster building and team building. I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, like, make sure we're getting value in everything we're doing. But at some point, like, we can also overvalue these things. And, you know, we feel really comfortable that the fit and confident that the fit is exactly what this team needed.
What do you say when people, again, they're jumping to the playoffs, which is not a given, but, you know, we're all hoping. Well, yeah, I mean, even Ryan Russillo, oh, it's a major upgrade in the regular season. He said this. Rudy Gobert is a major upgrade in the regular season. But he's seen a few playoff series where, you know, Ty Lue goes small and the Clippers get hot. So you don't have to give away what you're going to do, but you just kind of smile and say, we'll figure it out? Or how do you respond to that?
I mean, we're a team that's been in the playoffs twice in the last 20 years. Like, don't we want to be in the playoffs? I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't, but this doesn't have to be a fully formed, you know, thing. It doesn't have to live in its final version, right? It could be an evolution over a couple of years.
Right, right.
And, you know, if we get beat in the second round or the conference finals trying to figure it out, it's something to grow on, build on.
Right, right.
But we, you know, I think the most important thing for us is we can't make an assumption that we're just going to be there. We have to do a lot of work to build the foundation to make sure that we are a team that puts ourselves in a position to be disappointed by the things. And so Ryan, and I love Ryan. I did his podcast earlier this summer, but, you know, he can turn around and say, I told you so. I was like, we got to put ourselves in that position first.
Right, right. So I'm a big, I know that Rudy bothers some people for whatever reason. I don't really care why, if he's French or he's not, you know, skill wise offensively, there might be some limitations, but he changes the game so much. And of course the lob passes changes everything. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Cat, because I've always loved him and I don't care about his stray voltage or his personality or whatever.
Yeah.
I am absolutely stunned still at his shooting touch. He shot 54% his first 3 years. But here's a question. How do you decide? He's automatic on the jump hook down in the low block. I know he gets double teamed there. How do you balance the post up, especially in the playoffs, which I'm doing what everyone does. I'm just talking playoffs. But in the playoffs, how do you balance the post up versus the perimeter?
Well, my first half season with him, we post him up a lot. You know, I wanted to establish him back to where I thought he was elite, you know, in the league, and a little bit underutilized there. And it gave us a point, like, let's throw the Cat and everything kind of calm down a little bit. You know, we know we're going to get a good shot, or he's going to make a good decision here. Last year, you know, with the way that we, you know, with our roster that we were putting out there, you know, they didn't guard some of our guys, honestly. So they would just come double Cat. So we just kind of moved. We didn't have a, you know, we probably didn't do a great enough job of exploiting that. So we kind of just moved him out of the post. We just played him at the top of the floor a lot more. I mean, that's the luxury of having him. He's like so skilled. You can literally move him all over. Like, hey, there's a traffic jam here. Waze says that we should go the other way. Let's just do that, you know? And Cat has a great feel for making those adjustments all the time in the game himself, you know, like kind of reacting to what's going on out there. But I think one of the kind of ancillary benefits of the Rudy trade will now force teams to maybe match up with us a little bit more traditionally. And if they're going to double, that leaves like Rudy at the rim with all that size is probably a pretty easy target for Cat, or certainly on the offensive glass, he becomes even more damaging to an opponent. Or if they flip it around, or they play Cat one-on-one because they don't, you know, they don't want to double, or they leave a smaller guy on Cat, then, you know, we can get back to maybe taking advantage of some of these post mismatches or post up opportunities for Cat. So
right.
I kind of just like ebb and flow with what they're going to get, what they're going to give us. I don't try to fight it too much with Cat.
Yeah. I did a podcast as a guest after the Rudy trade with a guy that works for the Jazz, and he wanted to talk to me about the trade. And then I asked him a question and I said, you know, you see Rudy day in and day out. And I had seen Andrew Wiggins day in and day out, and I'm happy that Andrew won a championship, but Andrew had limitations in his game and I got a little tired of it, but you know, I'm a basketball fan. I said, is there anything that bothers you about Rudy? I know you guys love him and he's really has an effect on the defense. And he said, well, don't ever let him dribble. Don't ever let him dribble. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if I've seen highlights of him and he's actually a really good passer. I was surprised at Rudy's passing, like out of the post, he'll whip it in the corner. Will you learn more about his offensive game as you see him every day, or do you think you know it already?
No, we're definitely going to learn more. I've been watching him play for France, you know, and the way they employ him in France is altogether different than what Utah was doing. I mean, and again, not right or wrong, but it's allowing us to see some different things that he could do. His big-to-big passing on the interior has been great in this Eurobasket. He's been handling the ball through the elbow a lot, initiating offense. You know, he's been even posting up a little bit, certainly mismatches. And, you know, one thing has been really good for what we've seen is his ability to catch and make the next play in the pocket, like in the short roll. You know, that's actually been a pleasant surprise just watching these things. So we're going to start by saying, hey, Rudy, you know, we'll give you a pretty wide, you know, scope here to kind of figure out what you do well in our offense. Obviously, we want you to roll and be a vertical threat, be a great screener, all those things. But and then we'll just kind of whittle it down to say, all right, hey, let's do a little more of this, maybe a little less of that. And that's what we do with all of our players when they come into our system. We have a lot of freedom in our system. I think guys tend to play well in it because they tend to gravitate to the things they already do well because they have that latitude. And then it's easy when things don't go well for them to kind of nudge them back and say, hey, maybe we should, you know, not do that as much or look to do this in that situation. So it's kind of a continual refinement for us.
Ladies and gentlemen, when anyone sends you money or if you need to get paid back, always ask for Zelle. With Zelle, the money goes straight into your bank account. And it works even if the sender banks somewhere different than you in the U.S. You can probably tell by looking at me that Kreger's likes to eat out. A lot of French restaurants. Sometimes my friends pay. I don't like that. Afterwards, I use Zelle and I send them money. I ordered a lot of food. Sometimes we go down to the park and have a barbecue. Afterwards, we all pitch in. I use Zelle. I send hundreds of dollars to my friends. It's kind of a rush. I'm in the park eating barbecue wearing linen. Life is good. The money sent goes straight into your bank account, typically in minutes between enrolled users. You don't have to download another app because it's probably already in your banking app. It's in over 1,600 different banking apps. Always double check that the sender has your correct U.S. mobile number or email address so the money goes to the right place straight into your bank account. Look for Zelle in your banking app today. My name is Kreger's. Things are going very, very well.
Here's some fun ones I wanted to ask, detailed ones. A couple of years ago at Phoenix, when you guys won and Kat and Ant both scored over 40, in the fourth, all of a sudden, Kat had the high post and Ant posted up a couple times. And we haven't seen Ant post up. Was that just a one-off where you said, oh, they're doing something, I'm going to just post Ant up? Or do you think, or how do you make those decisions? And is Ant going to post up more? Or how do you do that?
Yeah. So in those situations, I would bet, you know, thinking back, they're probably more one-off situations, you know. Mm-hmm. Ant has been working on his post-up game this summer. I know it's something that he was looking to add. Generally, we're not like trying to post up. We'll post up anybody who has an advantage game there. I think a lot of things, you know, post up is, as you know, is kind of a lost art. It's a dying mm-hmm. art now. And the thing you have to have when you post up is a plan. Like most guys, when they post, don't have a plan. That's why you get a lot of bad shots out of the post right. now, which is what everyone's trying to avoid, these super inefficient shots. But I was really lucky when I came into the league as an assistant. I worked for Kevin McHale, another Minnesotan. And yes. Mac always, like, he taught me a couple things which are invaluable. A, how to see the game through a big man's eyes, because that's how he saw it, you know? So just sitting next to him every day, just the way he would see it is way different than a guard. And I've been able to, again, it's one of those like kind of really fortunate circumstances that happen in life that pays dividends the further down the trail you go. You know, I have Kat now. I work with Jokic. I worked with Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Dwight Howard. Like, I just, like, you know, and so I could be able to help. In my mind, I have Mac's voice saying, like, how a big man sees situations, you know?
Right, right.
So back to the post-up of Anthony, like, you got to develop a plan. But Kevin McHale said, like, what's your plan in the post? The plan in the post would be to get there, you know, like, basically pointing to a spot on the floor. Like, how are you going to get to that spot? And then everything funnels off of that. So, you know, Anthony certainly has the body to do that. I think it's a good way for him to be able to increase his foul drawing rate, which he mm-hmm. needs to do.
Yeah.
But it's at the expense of what type of spacing dynamic. You know, that's what we have to be careful of. You know, if we have Rudy on the floor, certainly Kat's shooting allows us to be a great spacing team with him. But, you know, you want to make sure that you're not, you know, gumming up the middle of the floor with post-ups.
You know, you mentioned Kevin McHale, and I was fortunate to see him as a high school player at Hibbing. And then he played at the University of Minnesota, and he was not as good a college player as Michael Thompson. Michael Thompson averaged 26 as a junior, 22 as a senior, was co-player of the year with Phil Ford, and McHale averaged 17. And then he blossomed in the pros. But where did he learn? He does these up and unders. And when they were playing in the 80s, I talked to Laker fans and they said, we can handle Bird. We can't stop McHale. So who taught him all those, the footwork?
Yeah. I mean, I don't ever recall like where he learned. I mean, just a gym rat. I know he was a gym rat. He probably obviously had a really good high school coach. But back to the point, like Mac had a philosophy. So like, I'm trying to get to the, what now would be the top of the restricted circle. He said, that's where I'm trying to go every single time I catch the ball. And I'm just going to go there simply with, you know, my inside shoulder and one dribble. And then when you take that away, you know, here's my plan B. And when you take my plan B away, there's my plan C. And I'm going to do it until you stop me. Like, right. If you don't take plan A away, I'm going. If you,
right.
So, and he always used to say, like, you know, guys get to plan C before they've even tried plan A. And yeah. So it was literally just this, like, decision tree that he had in the post.
Right. He was a joy to watch. We were so proud of him. It was so, oh, he called me. When I was a senior in high school, the coach at the assistant coach at Montana State, the basketball power where I went and led the Big Sky in turnovers. The assistant coach was from Minnesota. He was from Richfield, and he had McHale call me as a senior in high school. And you got to realize, I was a Dr. J fan and I hated the Celtics. So he says, hey, he goes, Montana State's a great place. I work camp there. And I said, oh, thanks. Thanks. I'm a Sixer fan. I love you, Kevin, but I'm a Sixer. They can't win in the garden, Craig. They can't win in the garden. It was so funny because I was like, I was really obsessed with Dr. J. But anyways, yeah, he's a great.
Yeah. Sorry. I grew up a Sixers fan. I grew up right outside of Philly.
Oh, cool.
And I used to go down to the Spectrum on Sunday afternoons when they would play. And I was one of the ones booing McHale mercifully, you know. So.
There's no smoking in the Spectrum. You remember Zinkoff? Remember that guy?
Yeah.
I used to do impressions of Dave Zinkoff, the great PA announcer. I want to talk a little D-Lo. Now, yeah. He's enigmatic. I've come around because – D'Lo and I have so much in common. We're both crafty. We're not great athletes. We both dress extremely well. But I don't know if you can answer this question because I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. But I've tried to figure out, I like pure shooters. He's a great passer, very nifty, has a great feel for the game, but he's not pure. He's so streaky. And is it his backspin? I don't know if his backspin is pure. And I always wondered, some of these guys like Tim Hardaway, they don't try to change his shot. Your coaches, I know you can't have five coaches telling a guy how to shoot a free throw or shoot a jump shot. What do you think of D'Lo's jumper? Any way to make him more pure? And is there one coach that talks to him? Is it Pablo Prigioni or how does that work?
Yeah. So Pablo and he work very close. You know, we all have try to have relationships with all of our guys, but he and Pablo have a very special relationship. And it's mostly, I mean, D'Lo's uber talented, like,
yeah,
and he has a habit at times of making the game more complicated than it needs to be. And it's just like Pablo's really good as an ex-player of being in there and like kind of getting him back to his base and being simple. D'Lo's an incredible shooter, like I mean, everything. We don't mess with his form or his backspin or anything. It's just he just will sometimes take shots and make them harder than they have to be. And, you know, that's just like when you have that level of skill and ability, sometimes you just get you're such a good shooter. You kind of shoot yourself out of rhythm because it comes so easily. And now hopefully you look back and like, hey, my mechanics aren't really sound. And just so keep like bringing him back to his base is what we try to do there.
Right. No, he's a showman where he'll do what Dame Dollar does. He'll pull up from so far out. Like he did in the Clipper game in the fourth. Oh, that was so pretty. That was so great. Okay, so we're going to do a little something now called the Life Gorgeous Quiz. Simple questions, profound insights.
All right.
Favorite Italian dish. Favorite Italian dish. I know you're very cosmopolitan.
Yeah. My favorite Italian dish is probably a bucatini.
Ooh,
with a light tomato sauce.
Tell me, is that a type of pasta?
Yeah, it's like a thick spaghetti.
Oh yeah, those are fun. Yeah, especially when they're homemade. That's very good. We had some people like Michelle. No, it wasn't Michelle Beadle. She chastised Rosillo, and then Rich Eisen was on, and they both said chicken parm, which is not really Italian. It's an American version. Yeah, so those guys, they don't know what they're doing. What are your thoughts on crumbled blue cheese?
Big fan. I'm a big fan of blue cheese. All blue cheeses, yeah.
Yeah, I
crumbled blue cheese with like a vinaigrette dressing on a salad is probably near the top for me.
I like that. Because if someone says I like it, I say, no, you have to love it. It sounds like you love it. who was your favorite player growing up?
NBA. Dr. J.
Oh, okay. It was Dr. Yeah. J. Yeah.
Yeah. But I had this internal battle. I grew up a Sixers fan in that era. And of course, the Celtics were great. So we had that rivalry. And then the Lakers were great. So we had that rivalry. And then being a high schooler, learning the game and like all these nuances were coming to me. And so I had to appreciate Bird and I had to appreciate Magic. So I actually loved Bird and Magic and Dr. J. Like, you know, sounds like a cop out. You like them all, but I you know, watched those guys all the time.
No, it's fair. And I, after Doc retired in 87, I loved Larry at Indiana State. And then after Doc retired in 87, I loved Larry. And I tell Larry stories. And I met him once when a friend of mine was shooting a commercial out here in L.A. And they wanted me to be sitting with him and talking at a beer place. And our audio wasn't on camera. They were the kids saying, there's Larry Bird. So I asked him every question. I go, so you bent your finger at Indiana State and you couldn't shoot as well in the pros as what your friend said. He goes, yeah, I broke it. I just told the doctor I want to be able to hold the beer. You know, he was just like, he's so entertaining. But yeah, I was a big Doc fan. And the other thing, when you just said you could like all these guys, I mean, I used to have Kevin Garnett on the old late night show. And I loved Tim Duncan. I mean, I loved Duncan. You know, Mr. Fundamental, the big fundamental down low. So you can like these guys. Just I didn't tell KG I liked him. You know, he didn't want to hear that. Yeah. What's your favorite pie?
Oh, blueberry.
Oh, that's a good, solid answer. And you didn't take it like snap like that.
Yeah, no. You know, good blueberry pie. You don't see it everywhere. You know, mostly a summer pie. You never see it in the winter.
The most popular pie down here at the farmer's market at Fairfax is boysenberry, which is kind of in the ballpark of blueberry pie. Okay, so two more things here. Don Nelson used to wear a sport coat. You guys don't wear sport coats anymore, which bothers me, but that's fine. But he used to have this turtleneck and then he'd open up his sport coat and put his belly out and go after the referee. And I thought he was going to knock him over, but he was trying to intimidate him and get a technical. Do you have a plan when you say, I want to get a technical? Is it premeditated? And you say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to say this, or I'm going to stomp my foot, or how do you do that?
Yeah, it usually starts with an F-bomb.
That's enough right there.
Anything after that, well, it kind of works.
it's an F-bomb followed by you, so you say it to the ref, right? Yeah. Okay, that's hilarious. Okay, so a little inside information. This is a joke, but I enjoy this. This is for my friends. So I have a big influence on the Timberwolves. You probably don't know this. I pull some strings. For example, Becky Taylor's lasagna is actually my recipe. It's ricotta from Fiorenza, Florence. It's not from Wisconsin. And I also have Mark Lori on speed dial. And A-Rod's an old drinking buddy of mine. So I want you to know something. Tim Connolly, that was my idea. I told Mark Lori, Tim Connolly, some of the people in the organization are very forgiving. They're overly compassionate. They wanted to give David Kahn another chance. Anywho. Are you glad, sir, that I suggested Tim Connolly?
I am very glad that you did. Tim's a wonderful hire. Like, you know, it's not often in this business with so much change we face that you get to work with somebody that you've known for so long. And I my relationship with Tim predates my time in the NBA. I mean, he's kind of a basketball junkie, and he was scouting overseas, you know, for a long, long time. And that's where we first crossed paths. In fact, his brother, who's the general manager in Chicago, assistant GM, I believe, you know, he actually lived in Nick Nurse's basement when Nick was coaching in England and we were coaching against each other. So, like, it's kind of just, you know, a small world out there sometimes and you don't realize. But no, Tim's awesome. Like, he's really good energy, people person. you know, excellent basketball evaluator of talent and roster building. And, you know, and he's easy to work with. That's what easy to be around, easy to work with. And most importantly, I think with, you know, in all these jobs, like in any profession, when you're, you know, you're at the top of sports or entertainment, people have a habit of taking themselves way too seriously at times. And, you know, I think it's fun to work with people who don't.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems like a really down to earth guy and real nice guy. I did not know. I'm glad to hear that you guys knew each other prior to Denver, because it was like, oh, they only worked one season together in Denver, but they're fond of each other. But that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Okay, we're wrapping up. We're going to take a quick break, and Chris Finch's top five movies of all time.
Ladies and gentlemen, when anyone sends you money or if you need to get paid back, always ask for Zelle. With Zelle, the money goes straight into your bank account, and it works even if the sender banks somewhere different than you in the U.S. You can probably tell by looking at me that Kreger's likes to eat out. A lot of French restaurants. Sometimes my friends pay. I don't like that. Afterwards, I use Zelle and I send them money. I ordered a lot of food. Sometimes we go down to the park and have a barbecue. Afterwards, we all pitch in. I use Zelle. I send hundreds of dollars to my friends. It's kind of a rush. I'm in the park eating barbecue wearing linen. Life is good. The money sent goes straight into your bank account, typically in minutes between enrolled users. You don't have to download another app because it's probably already in your banking app. It's in over 1,600 different banking apps. Always double check that the sender has your correct U.S. mobile number or email address so the money goes to the right place, straight into your bank account. Look for Zelle in your banking app today. My name is Kreger's. Things are going very, very
and we are back. I hope they told you to do this. Did they tell you to do top five movies?
Yeah, give me a little busy? Heads up. I'm going to try to get to five. These questions are hard.
They are. But it does say a lot, you know, like maybe you're a Caddyshack guy and maybe you're silly that way, or maybe you're more, you know, who knows? So tell me, there's no particular order, but give me your top five movies of all time.
Top five, The Natural is probably, is definitely up there.
Yeah, Bob Redford, beautiful. Yep.
Yeah. I love like kind of that era of movie in general, but the fact that it relates to sports and baseball, that's got to be one of them. Wedding Crashers. And a lot of people debate old school Wedding Crashers.
Right.
The chemistry between Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson is
that was great. A great one. That was a good one.
Oh God.
You took a little different turn there with, you went from The Natural to Wedding Crashers.
Yeah. Yeah. These are not in order. So
right.
This was Dances with Wolves. I mean, when it came out, I'd never been out west at that time. I couldn't believe when I was watching it, I was like, there's really places out there where there's that much space and nobody around. So, But, you know, that movie always sticks with me. I don't think I would ever take the time to sit down and watch all 3 hours of it again.
Right.
It's kind of.
That's a good one.
When it came out, it meant a lot, you know, to my life at the time. Oh, God. I'm really struggling here now.
Well, I should point out to the listeners and the viewers, a lot of NBA people, because they travel so much, the players and coaches, you guys kill time by going to see movies a lot, right? Yeah. Now you probably don't go see the movies, but you watch them to kill time, right, in the hotel room.
Yeah, when I was living overseas, I would go to movies a lot because I was, you know, I lived in Europe for 17 years, and it was one of the ways I could tap into Americana. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and oftentimes you'd go and you'd watch these like romantic comedies because that's like the most idyllic American kind of scene and feel you can have, a perfect hometown and a perfect everything. I remember American Pie coming out when I was overseas. And the time, like, we hadn't seen a movie like that for a long, long time. It'd been a while since one of those sophomore humor movies came out. And I remember watching overseas thinking, maybe I throw that in there. So,
okay, that's four. Is that enough for you? Or you got one more? You got going four?
Yeah, just tough.
I'm going to give you my list to see if you've seen any of them. But do you want to stop at four? Or do you want to try it for a fifth?
I'll stop. These too abstract for me.
So, I guess I'm a couple of years older than you, I guess. But I like old movies. But I'm a Hitchcock fan, so I always say North by Northwest. You ever seen North by Northwest?
Yep, I've seen that. Yep.
The Graduate.
Yes,
Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chinatown. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yeah. Yep.
This one you probably maybe not have seen. It's Billy Wilder is called the Sunset Boulevard. Maybe you haven't seen that one. You ever seen that? Okay. And then this one is a fun one. It's somewhat contemporary. It's from 2004, Sideways. Remember that?
Yeah.
Sideways?
Yeah.
That's a good one, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't do any of the sophomoric ones. I do. People do like, as far as the silly ones, The Hangover is very popular with a lot of my friends. Did you ever see that one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, Coach, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do our show.
Anytime.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
I'll be there a few times. I know some people, and I sit across from the Wolves bench. And last year was probably my favorite year, even though 2004 when KG won the MVP was great. I just didn't expect last year. So congratulations, good luck, and I'll be supporting you.
Yeah, and next time you're in town, come on by. Come backstage.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. And now it's time for fan questions. Every week, go to the YouTube page, ask a question, leave a comment, and subscribe. Here's the first question this week.
Hi, Craig. Was hoping to get some Los Angeles recommendations from you. I live in Dallas, Texas, but travel to LA once every other month or so. Was looking for maybe a classic theater for some film noir. A nice bar where the crowd's not chasing the night to grab a martini. Any locations that come to mind to live the life gorgeous would be appreciated. Big fan of the podcast. Thanks for your leadership.
Great question. Thanks for watching and listening. I don't go to the theater. I watch at home in my mahogany panel den. I don't go to the theater. If you're talking films. Quentin Tarantino does have a theater on Beverly near La Brea. Check that out. Polo Lounge. I mentioned it in the interview with Coach. Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel, one of the classic places Bob Evans used to hang out there. And of course, Musso and Frank, where once upon a time in Hollywood, they had a scene there. So those are the two that jump out. Some other ones that I like. I like Republic, Bicyclette, same owner. Two different places. The Edmund is a special underrated place near Paramount Studios. Those should give you a start. There are many. Those are the ones that kind of jump out for Kilby. Thanks for your question. And next question.
Hey, Craigers. It's been a hot summer. I've been eating a lot of sandwiches, and it's got me to wondering, what does Lord Kilby like on his perfect sandwich? Let me know. Thanks.
I don't eat a lot of carbs, but I love sandwiches. So I rarely have them. If I do, I have them on rye or pumpernickel. I'm going to give you three, and I'm going to give you the order of the three sandwiches that I eat. Number one, a Reuben. Pastrami or roast beef, pastrami or corned beef, excuse me. Sauerkraut, love it. Love Reubens. I love Reubens. I like chicken salad, and I like red onions with that, and I like cheese, and I like a slice of cheese, cheddar, and I like the mayo, and I like that. It's going to be on rye. Reuben's going to be on pumpernickel. Third, tuna melt. I like tuna melts. There you go. I don't eat them very often. I don't eat sandwiches. I wish I could, but I don't. Next question.
Mr. Kilbourne, are you telling us that you have to have on a blazer and a dress shirt as opposed to a t-shirt and a ball cap to fully enjoy your martini? For the enjoyment level to be peak, You need to be dressed up. Is that what you're telling us, sir? Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I need that feeling of the custom-made bespoke blazer sport coat on me. I need the good music, the dark lighting. I need that. And then the ice-cold vodka is magical. If I'm wearing a ball cap and a t-shirt, I might as well be having a beer and wings. What's going on over here? What kind of question was that? Who are you? Thanks for the question. Thanks for all the questions. That's our show this week. We'll see you next time. And remember, young people, I'm proud of you.